Hey everyone, thanks for listening to my podcasts here on the Hullerstubber feed. Do spread the word to other people if you think they might enjoy them. Do listen to some more if you think you might enjoy them, but do enjoy this one. I am shortly going to be on tour with my new stand-up show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Head to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all those dates. Some of them are sold out, some of them have hardly sold anything. It would really help me if you bought tickets to the ones that aren't sold out. Either way, as soon as you can. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's about cancer and testicles. One of them's not funny, but one of them's really funny, and it kind of cancels out the unfunniness. I'd say just on average, slightly more funny. So I hope you'll come along. If not, keep enjoying the podcast. We'll be back in September at the Leicester Square Theatre with more live podcasts. Maybe a few Edinburgh ones before then. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this stupid podcast you've chosen to listen to.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who is disappointed by what's it, crunchy, flaming hot crisps. It's Richard Herring.
Thank you very much. Hello. Hello, my fan, his friends. Hello, welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was hanging around with Big Daddy and Giant Haystacks. The other day, it's because it really split the audience between those over 50. Mick McManus was there as well. David, remember him? Kendo Nagasaki, he was there. They call it Rallistapa. So. Yeah, I think Kendo Nagasaki might still be alive. I'm not sure about that. But they were wrestlers. Just Dickie Davis has reminded me of them. We'll talk about him next week, or last week, actually. I've been on holiday for a week. I went to Norfolk with my kids during half term. We stayed in a place called Horsey. Anyone know it? No, didn't see the horse all the time we were there, named after it. We went to a place called Wroxham Park or something. Okay, it was in Wroxham. It was like a where you could feed animals and stuff like that. And we'd gone because they said there would be lambs being born, and we had paid more to see lambs being born. But we didn't see any lambs being born. We saw some lambs, and we saw some sheep in a tent, and there was a man giving a talk about the sheep to the children, who I think might have been a contestant on The Apprentice, because, like, he didn't seem to know anything about sheep. And even though he was talking, like, my son was probably the oldest person who was listening, right? So it was five and under. And he goes, so look, they've got red circles on them. What do you think that means? We don't know, mate. You're meant to be telling us. How many sheep do you think in? I don't know how many, mate. You tell us how many sheep there are. My favourite was, he said to a group of five-year-olds, what is colostrum? That was... Because I don't know. It was very good. The actual place was really good. But they had a big sign up saying Field of Fun, right? This very funky sign saying Field of Fun. And we were with some teenage children of our friends. They were going, do you want to go into the Field of Fun? It looks, yeah, that looks good, doesn't it? And we went in there and it was just a field with nothing in it next to a field with 10 sheep in it. And I think that was, and we'd already seen a lot of sheep, right? And that wasn't. I felt that was misnamed. They were quite rare breeds of sheep, apparently, but there was 10 of them, so they can't have been that rare. I called it the field of disappointment. It could be called the field of sheep, or just the field, or the I called it the Field of Disappointment. But on the way, so but it was very good, Wroxham. It's worth it. Go to see the Wroxham Barns or something it's called. I don't know. Take your kids. We had a great time. Played mini golf. It was fabulous. They haven't paid me for this advertisement now. Probably not, because I've been quite rude about them. And on the way to Norfolk, though, I bought a packet of What's It Crunchy Flaming Hot. Has anyone had a... Now, I think you're going to call them what? They're a new crisp, right? They're called What's It Crunchy. I'm expecting something different. They have to resemble a What's It, though, right? They can't just... You can't use the What's It brand. It was a knick-knack. They were just knick-knacks. They were spicy knick-knacks, which I didn't mind. They were delicious, but that, I was very angry, and they weren't that hot. And I was very disappointed. I was disappointed with the Field of Fun, and I was disappointed with crisps this week. That's what's happened to me. And we went to see some seals the day before we were going to see the lambs born, and there were hundreds of seals on this beach. It was amazing. And my daughter said, let's go and sit on that rock and look at them. And we went over and said, oh, we better not sit on that rock, because that rock is a dead seal with a hole in it. So, you know. So then to cheer up my kids, one of them had... There was a lot of dead seals there as well as some living. I mean, it's the circle of life. So to cheer them up, I was making lots of jokes. I said to them, what is... a seal's favourite pop star, and it's Seal, but they don't know who Seal is. It went on. It was like that. What does a seal use when it's trying to shut an envelope? A seal. It was. Well, I was doing that. My daughter came up with one. She said, "What does a seal say when it's going somewhere? Seal you later." Which was like a proper joke. That's no good. But her best one was, "What does one seal say to the other seal?" And they went, "Ah!" Which is what they said. So that was the best. So well done to it was oh great. It was great. It was near Great Yarmouth, where my bridge is going to be if we win. I don't know if we've won yet, but I don't know if you saw in the news a World War II bomb went off in Great Yarmouth, right by where my bridge is going to be. We tried to do this. Cheat this poll on the internet to get the bridge named Herring Bridge, which was one of the choices. But a bomb went off, and it's like Hitler. He knew that one day I'd try and get a bridge named after me, and he also knew that I would do a show about him, and he was getting his revenge. It was very, he's a very clever man, Hitler. Watch out for him. Everyone was all right. Great Land was blown up by a bomb. No one noticed. Right, let's crack on. My guest this week is probably best known for his appearance on the Coke New Music Project, but it might be podcast, with Adam and Joe. Will you please welcome the amazing Joe Cornish, ladies and gentlemen. It's Joe Cornish. Joe Cornish.
I've got some Coke.
You got some Coke.
This is very... good, yeah. Very thematically unified.
Was that a podcast? The Coke New Music podcast, was it a pod? Do you remember this? It was in 2006.
Nobody remembers it. Nobody listened to it.
2006, you invented podcasts.
They offered us a lot of money do a podcast sponsored by Coke about new music. So I think we listened to, I don't remember it very well, I think new bands submitted their material and we discussed it.
All right.
Whilst burping a lot. Or I don't know, whilst drinking Coke.
Yeah.
And that was it, and they paid us money. But I don't think anybody listened to it, really.
Is it still up there?
I don't know. I've no idea. I haven't looked.
Well, I'm going to look out for that. Yeah. I nearly chose. You were the director of Blunder, the sketch show Blunder.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. So that was a... Does anybody remember Blunder at all? No. Literally nobody. It was like a Channel 4 comedy show, but the cast were... Right, David Mitchell, Rhys Thomas, Tony Way, what's his face who writes the Paddington movies with Paul
Simon
King?
Farnaby.
Simon Farnaby. Aurum and Meaton, are they called?
Yes.
Nina Conti was in it. So it had this amazing cast, and they got me to direct it. They said, Joe, you can do this sketch show, you can choose the sketches, work with all these amazing people. I did that, and we developed really, really good sketches. It was with Channel X, right, who do all Vic and Bob stuff. And then about a month before we were due to record, the head of comedy at Channel 4 said, no, we're not doing those sketches. No, we're doing this sketch, and this one.
Oh, okay.
I said, but they're not very good. Anyway, she forced us to do different material. It's all her fault. And then I Do you want me to continue talking
about
this?
Yeah, I do. I want really for an hour.
No one's asked you about this for like 15 years, so I've got a fuckload of shit to get off my chest. So I think I'm going to stop, otherwise I'm going to get angry and name people.
I don't remember.
Listen, the commissioning editor of comedy at the time at Channel 4 was...
We can work it out. We can work it backwards. We can go IMDb and work it out. I don't remember. I mean, I was quite obsessed with sketch shows that got one series and then disappeared. And I don't even remember Blunder.
David Mitchell came up with this brilliant idea for a sketch. This is one of the sketches they didn't do that I wanted to do, where it was a guy... Maybe it's not that brilliant. Lower your expectations. There was a guy on the tube and he would... This is in the days before mobile phones. When someone was reading a newspaper on the tube, this character would just look over the person's shoulder and suck all the words off the page with his eyes.
That's good.
I thought that was good.
But
that was really good.
It wasn't allowed.
Too expensive.
Yeah. I heard you on Radio 2 the other day.
Oh, yes.
Talking to Claudia Winkleman about omelettes for a very long time.
That was her, yeah, that was her
was
thing.
A lot of talking about omelettes.
Yeah,
it
well,
was
that's
good.
The sort of thing that goes down well on Radio 2.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about omelettes for ages?
I think I'm all omeletted out. I did a bad thing on that show. Her voice went funny while she was talking, and she accidentally sort of went Cockney.
Right.
And my piss-take brain immediately said, oh, make a comment about that. Like, say, Claudia, well, I didn't know I was on the world's first Cockney radio show or something. But I took too long to say it. Do you know what I mean? She carried on talking, but I still said it.
Yeah.
So it felt like I was being quite rude, that I got the timing wrong. And I was sitting next to the text screen, so I could see all the text. And all these texts started coming in going, who is this asshole being rude? Rude to our Claudia.
Yeah, you must be.
So I thought, oh man, this was only about 3 minutes into the interview. And I thought, oh, fuck, I'm on shaky ground. So my omelette talk was probably like anxiety driven.
And you talked about tin of pilchards, and you said, or opening a tin of.
No, that was
the other person.
I can't believe we're
rehearsing in the car.
Claudia Winkleman's daytime Radio 2 material.
This is important. You were talking about opening a can of sardines.
No, that was the caller who
but
we had
you
to...
were talking about it, and you said, and then you're left with that annoying circular bit of metal. But it's a square bit of metal. It's a rectangular bit of metal. You look,
Pilchards.
You look like an idiot.
Well,
like
I person
who wasn't... You
listen,
weren't...
Fortnum & Mason Pilchards come in a circular tin.
Good. I'd be happy to talk about omelettes, but we won't talk about that anymore. We'll move on. Look, I've been watching Lockwood and Company and Co. Really, call it Lockwood
you
and
can
Company?
Call it, yeah, that's, yeah. You can.
Which is this fantastic new show on Netflix? We think we mentioned it last time you were here that you were in sort of development with it. I'd never heard of the books. Do you want to tell us a little bit about?
This appearance isn't officially part of my Lockwood & Co. promotional.
It is. Yeah.
Is it? So I don't need to talk about
it. You don't need to talk about it.
But it's a show on Netflix.
Yeah.
It's a supernatural... I'm doing it now. It's a supernatural action-adventure show set in a world where ghosts... There's a plague of ghosts. They can kill you if they touch you. Young people can detect them before older people... So agencies have been set up where young people are sent into combat with ghosts, armed with iron and all the and salt and all these sort of base materials that repel ghosts.
Cool.
It went straight into number one in the world.
I saw.
Yeah. Didn't stay there for very long. something called Ginny and Georgia.
My wife watches that.
I know, it's like wife bait.
Yeah.
there's nothing we can do about that. There's more wives watching telly than teenagers, right?
Right.
Because
yeah.
They're more depressed and indolent. I don't know what indolent means, but it sounds right.
It's a really high concept and it looks like a big budget.
What does indolent mean?
Indolent means... Oh, lazy.
Yeah, okay, there you go.
I wouldn't have gone for lazy, is that right? A lot of people have said that. Interesting. You learn stuff in this show. That's what I like. From the audience went through a period of being really smart. You could ask them anything, and it was like Wikipedia. They would know exactly straight away. Then they went, for a few years, they went quite stupid. You'd ask them. And now it looks like they're heading back to being smart again because they got, they all about five or six of them got that.
That's very impressive.
Yeah, that's pretty good. It's do you think there's a sort of what happened? COVID-19, that thing. Remember, is there an element of that sort of invisible force that can kill people?
I don't know. I hesitate to draw that parallel because I don't think anyone wants to hear about that anymore, do they? Like, it's the last thing you want to hear about. There's a show somewhere. I don't know what it's called, but apparently there's a show on TV right now where you can see the elastic indentations on the actors' cheeks.
Right.
Because they've just took their masks off just before. But we did make it during all that stuff. But you know, it's a very populated show full of fights and explosions and chases and close physical proximity. So there's no, I hope you can't tell that we shot it during that.
No, well, you can't in that sense. I saw Nigel Planer was...
he's playing, in it. He's in episode 3.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was exciting.
Yeah. How was that? Were you a big Young Ones fan?
Yeah, massive Young Ones fan.
I presume so, yeah.
Yeah. But so much so that I just want him to be Neil all the time. and you know, he's got that thing where with a lot of great comic actors, part of their most famous character is them. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And you, when you meet them, you think, you know, you can't really separate who they are from the character because you never saw them as a normal person. You only ever saw them as the character. Like, I remember when I first met Harry Hill. He has some little twitches in real life. And I thought, ha! Oh. That's, do you know what I mean? And that can happen quite a lot with famous people.
Yeah.
And that was certainly the case with Nigel Planer. He had a couple of little Neilisms, you know, slightly going like that every now and then.
He's more like, I love him, and I've talked to him on this podcast. He's quite like Nicholas Craig, I think, in real life, which was the act character. Do you remember the act character?
Yeah, not as well as I remember the Young Ones, no.
But it's a very good character. I encouraged him to bring it back, and I think he did and didn't work. So, no, I don't know if it did or not. It's a big budget, right, though, for Netflix. There's a lot of effects, but did you have to... Yes. I read something where you said you had to kind of, you know, write it so that those effects didn't come up too often.
The ghosts I direct the first and the last episode, so I put all the effects in my episodes.
Right.
we do pretty well, but the thing with those things is to hide them, you know, to the less you see them. It's the old Jaws thing, isn't it? The less you see the shark, the scarier it is. So it's better to withhold them. Unless you're in a fight sequence, because the clever thing about Lockwood & Co. is it's all the stuff you would expect from a supernatural scenario, but then you get in these combat situations because iron swords can disperse the ghosts. So you can't really hide a ghost that you're fighting with.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. So we're just ingenious about how we use the money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you ever
Take my word for it.
Have you ever seen a ghost in real life?
No, I haven't. I'm scared of ghosts.
Yeah,
and I was terrified as a kid.
Yeah.
I spent most of my childhood afraid of the supernatural and the paranormal.
Yeah.
Because anyone who grew up in the 70s and 80s will remember that it was a time of fear and danger and a time of risk, you know, when there was less protection for children. I mean, this stupid Roald Dahl story that's in the news at the moment, that's an example of how culture is being a little bit sort of cosseted. And it certainly wasn't when we were young. That seemed to be terrifying shit at every turn. And I had a big... I had that book, the Osborne book of the supernatural.
Yeah,
do you remember that?
I do.
They had 3 or 4 different issues, one on ghosts, one on monsters, one on UFOs.
Yes.
And they were... They just looked like books of facts. They really did. It's not as if they were in the bullshit section in the library. They were just in the library, which was a place of information.
Yeah.
So I believed it. I thought, okay, well, at some point in my life, I'm going to have to deal with these things. So Osborne Books have kindly presented me with manuals to deal with a vampire attack, a poltergeist attack. But if I go on holiday in Saskatchewan, not that I'd get there pronouncing it like that, then I'd have to deal with Bigfoot.
Yeah.
So now I'm, as an adult, I'm armed with all this knowledge.
Have you ever seen a Bigfoot?
No, but you know I'm obsessed with Bigfoot.
Yeah, are you?
Yeah, I genuinely love Bigfoot. And I've met someone who knew someone who saw a Bigfoot. Well, listen, in the world of Bigfoot, that is impressive.
That is pretty good.
Because he's very
Is it Brian Blessed?
It's very hard to get in touch with. Now, don't start being silly about Bigfoot. It's a very serious subject.
It's one of my questions I ask everyone, and usually people say no.
I know, and I've been waiting for you to ask it to me for years.
So you've seen...
and I'm so happy we've got onto it so early in the session. You thought omelets was bad. What about Bigfoot eating an omelet?
Do you think that? Do you think Bigfoot would eat an omelet? Who knows?
No, he'd fucking murder the chef. Is what he'd do. My Bigfoot is very, very violent and primeval. But this guy, when me and Adam did Glastonbury for the BBC for Six Music, we met. There was a Canadian technician. And we were driving. It's frightening. I heard someone whimper because this is gonna get scary.
That doesn't count as a Bigfoot. Yeah. Just a Canadian technician.
No, she's afraid of Bigfoot.
We met
she's
a Canadian technician. Right. That's as close as we've got to a Bigfoot.
So we're driving back from Glastonbury, and the conversation turns to Bigfoot, as it does when you're driving in a car with me. And he says, I can't do a Canadian accent, but he says, my mother saw Bigfoot. I was like, what? Oh, my God, tell me. But, of course, it was just a blurry, hunched figure across a field. But even that gave me a frisson of excitement.
Where would all the bones... But there must be, like, Bigfoot bones around.
Well, there's arguments against this sophistry.
Yeah.
Sophistry. Because there's lots of wild animals that die in the wild and you can't find their bones.
You find some of their bones, though.
No, none of them. No, you don't. There are arguments in books, Osborne books. There's arguments in Osborne books against this.
It could be like an elephants all go off to die in one specific place, then the big feet. Is that the right... Is the Bigfoots or the big feet? They might all go to the same cave that hasn't yet been discovered to die.
What are you talking about?
I'm saying that's why we might not get there, but if they all go to a special place to die, then their bones will be...
Like an
away.
Elephant graveyard.
Yeah, that's what
Bigfoots are very... They're loners.
Yeah.
They're savage loners.
How do they breed?
By having sex with other big feet. Yeah, it's not pleasant, you know. If you know how cats breed... Do you know how cats breed?
Well, I've heard them.
Want to know, basically.
Yeah.
So cats are a cute domestic animal. Now imagine how Bigfoot breeds.
Yeah.
You don't really want to talk about that on a late night podcast.
I'd want to talk about nothing else. Well, we'll see. I mean, we talked about this a little bit backstage, but you did, your uncle worked for a UFO magazine, so you thought like UFO. You were quite obsessed with E.T., right, as a...
Yeah, I liked E.T. very much as a child.
I mean, obsessed with E.T.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. Well, the thing is, in those days, movies would come out in America like a year before they came out in the UK.
Yeah.
And I went to school with posh people who would fly to America on their holidays, which we couldn't afford to do. So they'd come back boasting about the movies they'd seen.
Right.
And so when E.T. came out, I heard about it on the radio and read about it, and I got obsessed with going to see it. So my mum saved up and we flew to New York on a little holiday, me and my mum, and we got out of the plane, and she was very jet-lagged. We were stayed in a hotel in Times Square, a pretty grotty hotel. This is in 82, when Times Square was Times Square. I remember there was a massive neon sign right out of our bedroom window that said, Wet Dreams. I was like, that sounds like a great show. Mummy, can we go and see Wet Dreams? I imagined it was like water slides, a bit like Starlight Express, but with water. My mum said, no, I don't think we can go and see that. And then round the corner from the hotel was a cinema with E.T. on.
Right.
So jet lag was water off a duck's back for a 12-year-old. I was like, I want to see it. So my mum said, I'm not going to see it. I need to go to sleep. She took me to a cinema in Times Square in 1981, left me there, said to a random man with a big pager, would you keep an eye on my son? And said, I'll meet you at the back door when it's finished. And she went back to the hotel and went to sleep. And I watched E.T. on my own. So it made a big impression on me.
Yeah.
And then when I came out of the cinema, I was kidnapped and sold to the sex trade in 80s New York.
You found out all about Wet Dreams.
Yeah, and I appeared in Wet Dreams for many years.
See, it's interesting because I think E.T.'s had such an influence on your career, and quite a lot of the stuff you've done has had an E.T. feel to it, I think.
Well, Attack the Block's a bit like E.T. if Henry Thomas kicked E.T. to death
in
the first 5 minutes. Yeah. And then,
But when I was at school, we rebelled against E.T. as being a, you know, me and my friends refused to go and see it. I remember my parents tried to trick me to go and see. They said they were going to go to see.
How do you trick someone to see E.T.?
They said they were going to go somewhere else, and then I worked out. I said, are you taking me to E.T.?
Really?
They said, yeah, it'd be fun. I said, I'm not going. So I didn't see E.T. for ages.
Well, that's that age. When you're that age, yeah, like a couple of years can make all the difference, yeah, like with a film like that. Because it was seen as schmaltzy, wasn't it?
It was just, I think, like, we just had a really big anti-American sort of commercialism vibe. I still had it when The Simpsons came out, and I didn't watch The Simpsons for ages, because I thought...
Really?
Yeah, because I thought, oh, this is just some, you know, this is going to be some American kind of rubbishy commercial thing. Because I'd also, like, the Bartman and stuff, I'd seen all that. And then, obviously, I was foolish for that as well. And, you know, E.T. is a pretty good film.
Have you shown it to your kids?
I don't know if we have.
Your daughter's a good age for it.
Yeah, I think we might have watched E.T. We just watched films all the time.
She probably thought it was rubbish,
yeah,
did she?
Yeah. No, my son's obsessed. My son's obsessed with ghosts and zombies. He's terrified. He won't go anywhere. He won't go to the toilet because he thinks there's
really
a ghost in there. I have to go to the toilet with him. We live in an old,
so
creepy
house. So
when
you say obsessed, you mean terrified?
Yeah, he's terrified of them. We have got ghosts in our house, so he's right to be.
Do you?
Yeah, I think so.
Have you talked about this before on this podcast?
Yeah, a little bit. Okay. But he's got a door. He's got, in the old days, because it's a step, it's like an 80s.
He's got a door, it's a portal to hell. he's got this killer clown with arms that extend, try and strangle him.
In the old days, like, the doors of the house used to be all round, you know, the rooms were all go around the edge. So rather than, so there's door, there's
it
a...
It was a, it's a room made of doors.
Well, there's a
what
door...
What sort of a house do you live in?
There's a blocked up doorway between my room and his room.
This
He says that he sees people coming through that door.
No.
Yeah. But he hasn't. He's an idiot. He spent an hour on holiday.
This is so the setup for a horror film.
He spent an hour running in. His sister scared him, so he started running away, deliberately running into walls and shouting, "It's raining piranhas," for an hour. I mean, I don't know how you test a five-year-old for mental illness. Because that's sort of normal behaviour for five-year-olds. But it annoyed me in the end. And I can take a lot. It annoyed me in the end. It's raining piranhas. Shut up!
You're just one of those dads in a horror film that you're going, for fuck's sake, Dad, listen to the child. The ghost is going to kill him. That's the worst kind of... That'd be a good dad for a horror movie. A spoiled comedian.
But
I don't know why I said spoiled.
I'm very spoiled. A spoiled comedian, even worse. I've been listening to quite a few interviews you've done about your work. It's kind of, it is an omelette. I listened to the omelette one. The omelette one was the best one. But you've always had this big success with Attack the Block quite early on, or like a sleeper surprise hit, I suppose. You know, it's a smallish film that did really well.
Mm-hmm.
But then you sort of went, you've been to Hollywood and worked sort of in the periphery and films and around films and made some choices about which films you're going to do and not do.
In the periphery?
In the periphery.
I work with Steven Spielberg and Peter Jackson on Tintin and Marvel Studios on Ant-Man. Is that the periphery?
That one's not the periphery.
Where's the middle?
It came out wrong. It's like when I called your friend Louis Theroux annoying.
What did you say that again?
I called Louis Theroux. I said, when you were starting out, I watched some of your new stuff, your early stuff. You're just quite annoying, weren't you? He didn't like that. Then he turned on me.
I got to listen to that. That sounds good.
He was annoying, though. What am I saying? But what I think's interesting is that you've done some projects of your own and you've done some projects with other people. But it's still that struggle, even though you've had this early success, it's still that struggle to get your vision through the gate, I suppose. So with Ant-Man and with Tintin, to an extent, you've put a lot of work into
And it's
into
true,
those.
I was on the periphery of those. I was just a writer on those productions.
Yeah.
So struggle. As we're talking about struggle.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've struggled a lot. It's, you know, everything's massive franchises, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's difficult to get original stuff going. And also the stuff I do is sort of fantasy action adventure, which isn't that cheap. So you're trying to raise money, and it costs a lot of money to make a film, and you've got to convince people to give it to you. And if you're not a video game adaptation or a sequel or something, then it's a bit more of a struggle.
Yeah, and also you have made
struggle.
You've made that choice. To try, you know, which is unusual, I think, because I've just got so fed up. I used to love going to the cinema, and I realise I don't go much anymore because I'm not that into... I've seen a lot of the Marvel films, but I'm kind of realised I'm not that into it, and that's every film, whereas I've heard you talking about this, but, you know, there aren't any films there which are just... There aren't any films which are just a film
that you can watch from start to finish. I wouldn't say that's strictly true. Tar is very good.
Yeah.
I thought Triangle of Sadness was really good. Babylon is worth watching. Like, there's... It's worth watching. It's kind of a little wonky. But at least he's trying to make a film.
But I think when you're, if you're trying to do a film that's your vision, that's an independent idea that isn't based on a superhero,
yes,
existing superhero video game, it's very hard to get that through the gates.
Yes.
So, you know, you've managed to do it with two or three times.
Twice times.
Yeah.
And then a Netflix show, yeah. And yeah. I'll keep on going. You know, Edgar and I have this production company called Complete Fiction, and that's what we're going to try and do. We're going to continue to try and make original British commercial films, you know, with fun shit happening in them. Yeah. So we'll see how we get on.
Yeah. But, you know, I think it's interesting for us as a writer on any level. You sort of feel like the writer goes to Hollywood and is having writing films with Steven Spielberg. That's a degree of success. But that, you know, but it's felt very much like writing for Radio 4 for me. That you'll come up with an idea and you won't be able to get it off the ground, or you'll come up with an idea
and then
someone else comes and takes it away from you and
yeah,
does
it's not that dissimilar from my experience with Blunder.
So it's nice to know that it's the same on every level.
It is, and I've been very lucky. Basically, Edgar, I wouldn't have worked on either Ant-Man or Tintin without Edgar. I've basically been helped through my life by short, hairy men. First of all, Adam Buxton, and then Edgar Wright.
Yeah.
But then everyone's short compared to me. But no, Adam was amazingly kind to me to bring him on when he got hired to present Takeover TV. He called me up and said, would you help me out? And then Edgar was incredibly kind to me when he called me up and said, do you know anything about Tintin? And it turned out it was to write the film.
Yeah.
So I've been very lucky to have generous friends.
And becoming a director, going into directing, obviously as a writer as well.
Hey, you're a short, hairy man.
I am. I can help. I can.
What
help.
Have you got for me?
I can get you. You can come on this podcast as often as you like. I'm making some stupid sketches. Yeah, you could be in. Being a director is never. Interested me as a I'm kind of interested in writing
and cut
it. Yeah.
Back to ones, let's go again.
What is it that because it seems like a lot of work. It seems like you know, if you're creative, which you obviously are, it feels like, I don't know, what attracts you to directing? Because I don't, and
I think it's the same as you have an idea and then you want it, you want to make it, so you do whatever you need to do to make it.
Yeah.
It's good fun directing, actually. I really like it. And it's not that dissimilar to when we made little parodies of films with stuffed toys. genuinely, you know, the lighting and the camera positioning and the cutting, it's just, you know, that's the way to approach it, really. Not get freaked out by the size of everything. By the, you know, by all the people and everything.
Yeah, well, I would be freaked out by that.
Nah, you'd be fine after a bit. Listen, anyone can do it. Seriously.
But is it about understanding? Because like some people you feel like want to be in control of everything because they don't trust other people to get it right. Is it about making sure, just saying, you're doing that job, go away?
No, I think you're silly to do that because you're always like, if you think about it, a director like a director that works a lot will make a movie every 3 years.
Yeah.
Whereas the crews you're working with will make 3 movies a year. So everyone you're working with is much more experienced than you, pretty much.
Yeah.
So you'd be silly not to get their help. And it's weird. Whatever you ask them to do, they'll always have done it before. It's very hard. This says a man who's made 2 films. But it's very hard to come up with a thing that they don't know how to do or they haven't done before.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because they're so experienced and there have been so many movies made, especially in this country. You know, all those movies I saw when I was a kid, we saw when we were kids, all those big Hollywood movies like Superman and Raiders and Star Wars, they're all shot here. Aliens,
yeah.
They're all shot here. and all the crews were from here. So this is a really cool place to be to make those films, because you don't have any of the sort of swaggery Hollywood nonsense. You've just got British people in shorts wearing Skyfall T-shirts on their mobile phones, swearing a lot.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Good, yeah. And you kind of do, you prefer the UK. I mean, you live opposite the house you were born in, right? You've bought the house and your parents still live in that house,
yes.
I believe, yeah. So you obviously kind of like where you've come from. I mean, that's Attack the Block is set in that part of London that you grew up in. Is it the thing like when you've written something? So you've written Attack the Block, and I saw a thing on YouTube about talking about the cut scenes from Attack the Block, and you had to make a decision to cut 10 pages of the script.
Yeah,
due to budget, right?
Yeah, there was a whole like Errol Flynn style sequence where they climbed up the outside of the block and they were fighting aliens while dangling from the balcony,
right,
and stuff. And yeah, but it's often quite useful to write things like that because they can become sacred cows. You know, when you're writing them, you kind of think, yeah, I'll never get to do this. But then when the budget crunch comes, you know, you can just get rid of them. But I did have to think of a whole different way to get them up to that room. The logistics had to be reorganized. But it ended up actually, that's what made, if you remember the film, that's what ended up with Jodie Whittaker's character going into John Boyega's character's bedroom first. And that's a really good bit of the film. So yeah, that happened because of out of necessity, really, right, rejigging it.
And that film was inspired by you genuinely being carjacked.
Yes.
How was that? How was the experience?
Not very nice. It was a misty winter evening and all the windows of our Fiat Punto were steamed up.
Yeah.
And me and my girlfriend, now wife, we just got into the car, I think. And we closed the doors and the doors opened again, both of our doors from either side, right, simultaneously. And there was a group of young hooded gentlemen wearing masks who invited us to step out of the car. So I just gave them everything, as you do under those circumstances. And they got in the car and drove off. But it was like a scene out of a Western. It was really cinematic because they looked like ninjas. And the lighting was kind of that amazing London orange street light,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And it was what they call in the movies a wet down. When you shoot at night in film, you always wet everything down so that the light reflects. You'll notice it if you watch films. That sort of... That, you know, that John Carpenter, Walter Hill kind of Western thing. Yeah, yeah. And also I felt like I knew the kid. The kid was very young, the leader of the gang. And I felt like I knew him because that area of London is, you know, very mixed and there's lots of different sorts of people living, yeah, very close to each other, lots of different housing, very cheek by jowl. So I thought, I bet I know you. I've probably seen you in the park. I'm probably playing the same video games as you are. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But yet here we are in this peculiar role-playing game in which I get terrified and you get a Fiat Punto. So I just started thinking, well, what would happen if I'd seen Signs, right? The movie Signs, which I really liked. And I thought, well, what would have happened? It just came to me that what would happen if a meteor had crashed and a creature jumped out at that moment? Suddenly, yeah, I would want them on my side.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
I would want their skill set. So that's how it started. And I got my Punto back in the end about 8 months later with a really shit mixtape in it. Like insultingly bad music. And a wonky passenger seat, and we still drove it for 5 or 6 years.
It's, yeah, sort of, you know, but that's, I mean, it's a very comedian's mindset to for something quite bad to happen, and then you go, hold on, I think there's an amazing idea in this. So like in a sense, if that had, if,
yeah,
that,
right, like happened, making material out of experiences, yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. But if that hadn't happened, then, you know, I mean, I got my phone stolen when I had a Hitler moustache and had to chase this black guy on a bicycle going, stop, and no one wanted to help me for some reason. And you know, and then you go, oh, I've got a routine now. That, so it was worth the 500 quid for the phone or whatever it would have been.
Yeah.
But it's sort of weird to be able to turn something.
Well,
negative.
Isn't that what they say? When at school they said to me, your writing's better if it's based on personal experience.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's true. And I like fantasy when it's mixed with reality. All those 80s Spielberg films, that they're like half Truffaut films and half ridiculous fantasy, aren't they? Like, yeah. The scenes of that marriage breaking up in Close Encounters are amazing. Those arguments between the parents and the kids are like properly great dramatic scenes,
yeah,
combined with crazy UFO chases. I love that stuff.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare tri-term medical plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Terrific. Let me ask you some emergency questions.
Does that mean this is an we're in a state of emergency?
We're in a state of emergency because you've just said no. I just feel like I don't know what I'm going to go to next, so I thought I'd ask a question. Oh, this comes out of my anger about the new What's It Crunchies.
Yes.
What has been your greatest crisp disappointment, would you say?
Greatest crisp disappointment?
Yeah.
Jesus
I know
Christ.
I know you enjoy crisps.
Well, every time a packet ends.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the most disappointing thing about crisps is how revolting they are to eat. There's no other foodstuff that is so revolting. You've got to get your fingers involved, and you've got to get your fingers in your mouth to chisel the wads of pulp out of your teeth. And according to dentists, they are the worst foodstuff for your teeth. They're worse than boiled sweets or chocolate. They are just poison for the fangs. But they're so crunchy and delicious.
They are nice.
So crisps are delicious, aren't they?
You're a fan of Pringles, I believe.
Well, I like the way whoever made them the shape of a tongue, is a genius. The way they just they can just sit on your tongue like a claggy bit of lettuce.
Yeah, I don't.
Then just dissolve.
I find the dissolved Pringle
Of course, that's the clag.
And it tends to sort of...
Bob Mortimer on some, maybe on Adam's podcast, talked about making mashed potato from crisps. It sounded fucking revolting. That's just like going straight from just getting rid of the crunch and going straight to clag, which is foul, if you ask me.
It's like smash, isn't it? I was trying to explain smash and pot noodles to my daughter, who's never had either of those.
Giving her the talk at such a young age. Well done, Rich.
It's very hard to explain what smash was to someone who...
Does it still
exist? Real potatoes. Yeah. Do you remember Smash?
Yeah, sure I do. I remember the robots.
Yeah, that's
all
I remember.
All Smash gets smashed.
I don't think we were allowed to eat Smash in my family.
No.
And I was annoyed because the adverts were so good. We weren't allowed to go to Butlin's, which I really wanted to do as a child. My mum and dad felt that it was
below
was not middle class enough, I think.
Yeah. Spoiled comedian.
They are.
There you go.
But my parents are both kind of quite working class. I think they had this aspiration away.
Upwardly mobile, yeah.
Yeah, so there we go. Yeah. All right, another emergency question. How many penises do you think there are on the Bayeux Tapestry?
What, visible?
Yeah.
Or visible. Under the clothes?
Out.
And you're talking about, like, the anatomical penis, not just pricks.
I mean, an actual penis, but it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be a human penis. By the way, I don't have the answer written down.
Yeah, I think none.
No, there are definitely.
Are there really?
There's about 89, I think.
Because is there a naked army that gets attacked?
There's two human penises, I think. Most of them are horse penises.
Okay. I thought you said you didn't know the answer.
King, I'm just working backwards to when I first came up with this question that I never thought I'd ask again. I think King William's horse has a bigger penis than King Harold's.
Horse.
To his horse. I don't think it's what goes in his eye. this is a better question. There's a lot of penises on the Bayeux Tapestry.
Oh, I'm going to have to look at it again.
And it's not a tapestry either.
Isn't it? No, it's a hall carpet.
It's a crochet or something. What is it? It's not a tapestry. It's a what? It's an embroidery. Good, aren't they? Good today.
This is really good. Listen, this is below you.
How many?
This is beneath you. I know it's Monday, but come on.
Right. Do you have any clear childhood memories that simply can't be true? I have a memory. I'll tell you my two. One is going out into my back garden and Saturn being in the sky the size of the moon.
Yes.
I remember that happening.
Yes.
Another time, this might have been a trick. My sister did it, but she did it. It was amazing. She pretended to prick herself, or I remember pricking herself on her leg and blue blood coming out of her veins.
Well, isn't it true that blood can be different colours depending on... Isn't it? No. I thought it can be different colours depending on which part of the body it's in.
No.
Maybe your parents dyed her blood blue because they wanted to be more posh.
Maybe.
A little bit of quink.
Could be.
Quink.
Do you have anything like that? Do you remember?
No, I've had nightmares. I had nightmares as a child that I can vividly remember as if they were real. A man with a wolf's head and red Y fronts stepping into my room, literally, when I was a kid. And that can't be real, can it? I mean, the red Y fronts, yes, that's within the realm of possibility. But the wolf's head, no.
Yeah, that's quite scary.
No, I don't think so.
Do you think the Jupiter thing's possible, that I possibly went out and saw, or Saturn, wherever it was, the rings?
What is it? Explain it again, please.
I went into the garden and there was, in the sky, there was the ringed planets. Which one's that, Saturn? Yeah. That was an easy one. But that one was beneath you. Like the size of the moon in the sky, and I was in the back. But like, why would I be in the back garden at night time?
Yeah, that's not possible. Unless you, I don't know. No, that's not possible.
No. I remember it.
Unless you had a bit of grit in your eye that somehow adjusted the power of your eyes for a millisecond. Yeah.
Sometimes the moon looks really big, though, right? So
it does. It always looks very big in films, doesn't it?
Yeah.
In America, is it really that big?
When I was in America, when I was 18 or 19, I think this is true. The moon on the horizon just looked about five times bigger than it would.
Yeah,
it was massive. So I think it does. It happens in America because America's closer to the moon. That's probably what it is. You've been there, you know what it's like. Right, we'll do one more. I won't ask you the OGs. So I've promised one that didn't work out very well.
The what?
It doesn't matter. What tune would you sing, Oh Jesus, I Have Promised? Do you remember the hymn, Oh Jesus, I Have Promised?
No, no. So yeah, don't.
That's
worry
why
about
it's
that
not
one.
A good question. There's like this.
We did a thing. Adam once did a thing on the radio show where, like, you quite often find, like, I went to a memorial the other day for a relative who'd passed away, and there was a hymn I just had never heard in my life before. So you just have to riff it, right? And they're quite easy to riff for him is fairly easy because they're all about the same. And they do this and they do that and then they end again.
Yeah.
They're mostly all like that, aren't they?
That's good.
But thank you. You just have to stay half a beat behind the person next to you.
And you get a little clue in the intro is usually like a little away... Way in.
That's right. They give you the verse chorus.
They give you a little clue.
That's true.
I tell you the song that has the best intro that I didn't realize.
Yes.
I just heard it on the radio the other day. the Wombles of Wimbledon coming away.
You know, isn't that amazing? I was going to wait for you to finish what you were going to say.
Yeah.
And then I was about to say, well, the song with the best intro ever is the Wombles. It's got the longest, the most notes. That's a shitload of notes.
It is. And it's sort of nothing to do with what comes.
We should be friends. I've really thought about that quite a lot.
I just heard it when that is the most amazing piece of music.
You look a bit like a Womble. Only because of the hair. What Womble does Richard look the most like? Orinoco.
I like Tom.
Bulgaria.
Uncle Bulgaria. Toba Mori.
Uncle Bulgaria.
Madame Cholet. As
Uncle
sweet as Gabby.
Bulgaria. Who can remember the times when he wasn't behind the times?
With his map of the world.
Pick up the paper. Fucking hell. Let's talk about omelettes.
It's great. I want to try and get the intro to the Womble song into the charts, but not the rest
of
the
song. It would be a good sample for Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah.
Wouldn't
it's like on really funky brass instruments or something. Some like umpar.
It's not
I think
funky.
It's maybe on those big.
It's never going to be funky.
It's like a weird. It's good. It's my favourite song. Okay, I've got back to the proper questions. How are you doing being. You and I. Well, hey, I wanted to ask you. You are going to be 55 this year. You're a year and a half older, younger than me. And that is halfway through your 50s. And I'm going to be 56 this year. Mm. And I very much feel terrified about the slide into being in my 60s. Mm. And much more, I realised, than I did about my 40s and 50s, which I did shows about. How are you feeling about heading towards 60?
Absolutely, 100% fine.
Are you?
Yeah, I don't give a shit.
Okay.
Seriously, I don't. Adam gets very burdened by that sort of thing. He gets depressed by the weather. But there's nothing you can do about it. So I feel absolutely
so old,
fine.
Though.
Yeah, but there's nothing that will absolutely definitely happen. Do you know what? There's nothing you can do about it, and you can't be sure what will happen, so why worry about it?
Okay, fair enough.
You're looking great. You're a sexy man.
I know,
I'd say you're at your peak. You're funny. You've got your wits about you.
Yeah.
Look at these people who've turned up to see you on a Monday night. Like, Richard, come on. You've got nothing to worry about. You've got two beautiful children. You've got a beautiful wife. You've got an amazing... You've published books.
Yeah.
You've been on television. Listen, you've got so much to be grateful for. Stop moaning. And what's more, stop preemptively moaning about shit you don't know that's going to happen.
I heard you talking to Brett Goldstein about how having a baby made you realise that everyone used to be babies.
Yes.
But I... which it does. But I, an old man, I was in Stevenage, and an old man drove past my car in a mobility scooter looking quite miserable and old. And I thought, wow, he used to be young.
Yeah.
He used to be like a young person.
Yeah, but then he's just like a baby again, but he controls his own pushchair.
Yeah, he does. So but he would net that. I don't think you ever really think. You see old people, and it's like a different species of person. And you never really think that's going to be.
I think it's fine. It's going to be fine.
Okay.
It's going to be absolutely fine. You can put some stickers on your mobility scooter.
I'm going to be on
They'll put a ramp up there. It's going to be fine.
All right. He looks so unhappy.
Okay.
Oh, this is what I wanted to ask you. Did you remember with Lee and Herring... We tried, it didn't ever really work. We tried to popularize the phrase, look at his Cornish face. Do you remember? Do you remember
that? Yeah.
Which meant, and it came from us, we wrote a sketch that really made us laugh that was about, and I can't remember what it was, but it was something about a waiter and spitting some food back in his Cornish face. And so Cornish became to mean disgruntled. And we used it like for any smug, like, journalist or something.
Sounds
we'd
about
say,
right.
We'd say, look at his Cornish face.
Yeah.
Did you ever worry about that would catch on?
No, I don't think so.
Look at your Cornish face. I mean, it's literally...
I think my family are Irish,
are they?
Actually, and my dad says they just came over to Britain and arrived in Cornwall and just called themselves Cornish.
Yeah.
Just because that's where they were. So, yeah, it doesn't count.
I mean, it didn't also. It wasn't about being from Cornwall. It just became a different... It came to mean something.
I think it's racist.
Yeah, it is definitely racist.
And as a representative of the Cornish people, I think you're racist.
But I'm from Somerset, so it's nearly the same.
Oh, okay then.
But I'm from Yorkshire, really. Okay. Been annoying if it had caught on, wouldn't it? And then every time you went mime Joe Cornish, people would go look at your Cornish face, but it didn't catch.
I got, you know, when you're called Cornish, you get the gamut of pasty jokes.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, I said that as if there was another joke coming up. But that's it. That's the only joke.
The Cornish language.
The Rolls Royce Cornish there was in the 70s.
Yeah,
I think that's it. It's not too bad.
Yeah, that's all right.
Better than being called Herring.
It is.
I mean, imagine.
It's a really weird... I mean, it's sort of weird that no one's...
You must have been teased, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Dicky Fish. There was a lot of got kicked.
Imagine a pasty with herring in it.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
I actually don't imagine that.
There must be. It must happen. How did you end up at this posh... You sort of, a couple of times you've said, you know, I went to school with lots of posh people. How did you end up at this posh school if you were...
My dad... had a mortgage on a house. No, he had an insurance policy on a house, and he tells me that when you cashed in an insurance policy in the 70s, you got a bunch of money back.
Right.
So he took this lump sum. He was friends with a housemaster at Westminster School, or a friend of a friend. And so through that person, he said to Westminster School, this was when I was about seven, he said, take this lump sum of money, if my son is clever enough to get into the school, use that for the fees. If he isn't, give it back.
Right.
And they took it. And I just about scraped in. So I think both Adam and me were, you know, sent there by ambitious parents.
Yeah.
And, you know, we didn't really go on holiday to speak of out of the country, whereas everyone else at that school was... jetting off everywhere all the time.
Yeah.
So my dad did, you know, and I was brought up in Stockwell, which is hardly Kensington, and in the 70s and 80s particularly. But, you know, he worked really hard to send me there. And I'm very grateful that he did, because I wouldn't have met Adam and Louis and if I hadn't gone there. And, yeah, but he put that money down early to beat inflation.
Right.
And then I think he only had to pay a little bit on top of it every year that I stayed there.
Yeah, it's a nice school. I've been into the school.
It's ridiculous. It's amazing to go there. Yeah, to be like, I mean, we had assembly in Westminster Abbey.
Yeah.
For fuck's sake. That is absurd. Nobody would sing. We'd just go... la, 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 la. And about every 6 months, they'd have to go, right, we're stopping lessons and we're taking you and we're going to teach you to sing. You must sing. But only lasted for a day. That's probably the same at all schools.
Yeah, maybe. It was not the Westminster Abbey bit so much. We sometimes went to St Andrew's Church.
Yeah.
On an Ascension Day. My dad was my headmaster on Ascension Day. He said, let's have a minute's silence while we think about Jesus or something. And I did a massive burp. and it came out much louder. Unlike the loudest burp you've ever heard.
Yikes.
And my dad looked really angry and then saw me laughing and had to kind of go, oh, shit. I can't do anything. I'll have to think about it. So, you know, it's very similar to Westminster Abbey. But you were at school, like, with lots of people who were basically famous people's kids, right? So the Nepo baby thing.
Yeah.
Everyone you're at school with is...
I'm okay for that.
Yeah.
I'm all right.
Yeah.
I did not have famous parents.
No. Your uncle worked on the UFO magazine.
He was the art editor for the Bufora magazine.
So...
Is that bad?
That's pretty bad.
Yeah, no, we had this crazy year with lots of people with famous surnames.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tough times. Tough times for J-Corn. No, it was weird, though. It was weird. Like, it was weird to be... Like, Adam and I just sort of deliberately decided to make friends with people.
Yeah.
So we could go on nice holidays.
Did they treat you any differently for not being, you know, wealthy, or did you?
Not really. I mean, we tended to go to their houses rather than invite them to our houses, because our houses didn't have lifts. That was probably the only... No, but, you know, you don't... When you're that age, it doesn't... It's not like... It's all just like a crazy, like... In a way, you're all the same because you're all going through the same classes and you've got the same petty rivalries and like kiddie politics, haven't you? And then it's just, oh shit, that person's got that house.
Yeah.
Or, oh man, that person goes on holiday there, or they've got that toy or something, which is probably the same to a greater or lesser degree, you know, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. But, and also, like, out of, you know, I know a lot of people who went to public school, and the people mainly from Westminster, not Giles Corran, turned out to be kind of pretty cool.
When you leave school, I think it hits you. Like, everybody else went to proper universities. Adam and I went. I went to film school in Bournemouth. Adam went to art college in Warwick.
Yeah.
So we were not academic by any means, and we did feel a little bit like failures, you know, that we hadn't really done what we were supposed to do. And it affects you when you leave school, and people have different amounts of cash to fall back on, don't they?
Yeah.
I think, or different, you know, more of a safety net when you leave school.
Yeah.
So I think that was quite weird for both of us to leave there and suddenly find, oh, like, we're not that, actually.
Yeah.
But the end.
Yeah. You both seem like, you and Adam, I mean, you both seem like regular people.
Well, we can't.
Which public school boys don't always.
I would not deny that we were incredibly lucky, like amazingly lucky, but that's precisely what our dads wanted, you know.
Yeah.
Adam's dad bankrupted himself to send him there, pretty much.
All came good, didn't it, when he got on telly, though?
It did. But we didn't get on, you know, we got on telly because we bunked off school and made videos all the time.
Yeah.
And put on plays all the time. And instead of paying attention in maths, we drew comic strips all the time. So it was that the fact that we were ignoring our education that really got us somewhere, rather than whereas Louis went off to Oxford, and, you know, so good for, he was very bright, clever man, boy, tiny boy.
He's a nepo baby.
No comment.
We've got that over him now. That next time he comes on, I can get him with that. That'll be fine.
But what about, the thing is, your children, we've now got nepo babies. What are we going to do about that?
Yeah, I'm going to help them out. My son's doing the next series of this. Then you'll fucking regret your... How are you feeling as an older dad? Is that, you know, you and me have become dads at nearly the same age. In fact, you're a little bit older than me when you became a dad.
Yes, I like it. I love it.
Yeah.
Simon Cowell is my role model. Literally, sometimes I think, oh, Simon Cowell, that's okay. He's older than me. I was saying to you backstage that my daughter's just learned to ride a scooter, mm-hmm. and that is challenging to chase after the scooter. I think that's the beginning of something that's going to be more problematic. But I really like it. Yeah, I like it. It's nice to feel, you know, a little bit more secure, isn't it? It must be terrifying to have a kid when you're starting out, to have to... do all the making a living stuff. Is it? People who had children when they were young, it can't be easy.
I mean, I think you just make it work, whatever the case. But I agree. I mean, I think the idea of me having, you know, like, I could have had a kid when I was, I mean, I'd have to be 20 because I didn't have sex till I was 19, nearly 20. So I could have a 35-year-old child now.
That's weird to think. But it's like, we're lazy, basically, aren't we? We're indolent.
Yes.
Like, because we've just left it as late as possible.
Yeah. I mean, I'm really glad I've done it. I'm really glad it's happened.
Yeah.
And it is, it's just that worrying about getting too old to do stuff. My daughter's 8 and I've been playing basketball with her, and that's quite challenging.
Yes.
She's better at basketball than me, even though she's like 3/4 of my height.
But that's good. You don't want your dad to beat you at basketball.
No. I could, if I really tried, I could stop her scoring.
Really?
Well, I could get in the way of her shots.
Yes.
But I can't keep up. I could run past her and then get to the end and then go, oh, God. And then she's just in my face with her hands. Is that allowed? I don't know if it's allowed in basketball. It's, you know, it's good fun. It's all good fun. Good. Done. We know we've fulfilled our contract. We don't have to do it anymore. I wanted to ask you about the song wars. The one that I really remember, and I think a lot of people remember for both songs, was the Quantum of Solace one, which I just, and your Quantum of Solace is up several times on YouTube with with people who've put visuals to it.
Yeah, I put visuals to it. I took it down, though, when I got that job on Tintin.
Oh, did you?
And it had about a million views on YouTube, and then I got the job on Tintin, and then they cast Daniel Craig as the villain.
Okay.
I was like, uh-oh. He's got a gun and great big man tits. I thought that was might not go down well with Craggles. So I took it down. And lost a million views, but it's back up now.
Yeah,
I'm glad you liked it.
But it's like what those ones just stick. Both Quantum and Solace songs, and I often find myself saying
Adam's one's brilliant as well. I want a Quantum of Solace,
but no more than a Quantum. They said have a big bag of. I know they have big bags of Solace, but I don't want them.
Yeah. Okay.
That and why can't we live forever is the thing that I continually quote from Song Wars. But yeah, it's a great. How much time did you spend working on those?
Too much time.
It was much too much time.
Yeah, this is going to bring us full circle back round to Claudia Winkleman again.
Yeah.
Because when we were off air, our conversation was about BBC salaries.
Right.
And we got paid £1,000. To do the 3-hour show, but we were working 4 days a week on it.
Yeah.
So you'd at least 2 days to make a song, and then another day to read every single, because we did read every single email to try and pick out the funny ones and made up jokes, and so it would be, for 4 days a week, and then the show on Saturday, and you get home at lunchtime. You'd have Saturday afternoon, Sunday. You maybe do Monday to maybe. Try and do something else, and then Tuesday you were back in it.
Yeah.
So it was fantastic while it lasted, but eventually it was like fucking hell, because most people who do that sort of show do panel shows, right, or have a column in a newspaper, or have a TV career on the side, or they do it every day. That's how you do it.
Yeah.
You don't do one 3-hour show a week that takes you 4 days to prepare.
Yeah.
It's not economically sustainable.
No. Well, me and Andrew Collins took over from you, and we didn't do 4 days work.
No.
Which may have been noticeable in the end product. we would meet up in Cafe Nero on the morning. And
then we were so competitive, you know? So it's not as if you could just phone in the song, really. I mean, even though we did every now and then, but... Because if you had something you actually had to do in the week, it would mean, fuck, Adam's going to beat me. He's going to beat me. So it became like an arms race. And that was even more time-consuming and anxiety-inducing.
And as the competition between the two of you settled a little, because I understand it from the double acts I've been in as well, there's always that element of, you know, who's doing better and who's doing the best song and whatever. And do you feel now you've reached a plateau with that? Or
because we're doing such different things.
Yeah.
I must say, I don't think I felt it as acutely as maybe Adam did, because I hear him talk about it a lot on a lot of different podcasts. Whenever I switch him on a podcast, it's like, oh, here we go. In a nice way. I love it. I love hearing. He's brilliant on podcasts and I love to listen to him. But I don't think I did when we were in our 20s. But after that, I didn't feel it very acutely because we do very different things.
Yeah,
he's amazingly funny. He's an incredible mimic, and he's so fucking stupid. The voices he does are so ridiculous. Like, I don't know anybody else who can make me laugh as hard as he can with just such random. Like, you can't even tell where it's coming from. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But just like the voice of Mandrew on that advert on his podcast. You know the guy that does the Squarespace ad? Like, what even is that? But it's the funniest thing I've ever heard, you know. And I can't do any of that stuff.
Well, again, both of, you know, he puts in a lot of work into things that don't need that much work.
Yeah.
Like the adverts on the sponsor reads. You don't need to work that hard on them. They're still paying. I hope they pay him a lot of money for doing them because he does do more than necessary, I have to say.
How much do you think they pay him?
It depends how many listens he gets, I think, and how many downloads. He does get a lot of downloads. Yeah. But he doesn't do 100 episodes a year like I do.
Right.
So I can't quantify what he might get. Can't help me there.
Okay.
What I do is 100 episodes that are half-assed.
Right.
And probably... It probably works out about the same. I was doing 20 episodes and working really hard on them. Good. Well, look, do you think, is there going to be more Lockwood and Company? I just keep on thinking of Aspel and Company now. Remember Aspel?
Is there going to be more Aspel and Company?
Is there going to be more Aspel and
I don't know. I mean, we're waiting for Aspel to tell us. Is Aspel still around?
I was going to ask you if Aspel. He's one of the ones.
Ask Aspel. That was another of his shows, wasn't it? Yeah. Ask Aspel, are you still alive?
I think he is. I believe. Anyone know the... No, he's gone. No one knows. It's Dickie Davis all over again.
What?
When Dickie Davis, yesterday Dickie Davis died, and I was shocked because I was pretty certain he died 20 years ago. So I was shocked to find out he was still alive, and then shocked to find out he was dead again. It was only because he feels like some people don't even know who we're talking about. He feels like from so long ago, it's like someone saying, have you heard Benjamin Disraeli has just died? Go, what, the 19th century That's Prime true. Minister? Yeah. What? Was he still alive? Yeah, he was still alive. He'd stopped being Prime Minister. But he was just looking after himself.
Yes.
So it's so far away, isn't it?
I do. I appreciate that. But that's always nice, isn't it? I like it when someone you think is dead is. It's like when Dick Van Dyke popped up on The Masked Singer.
Yeah, but he's alive.
Did you see that story?
I did. It was lovely. But I know Dick Van Dyke's alive, so that was nice.
There's something
but it's
to
when,
be
it's,
said.
You only find out when they die that they were alive.
Yeah, but I didn't know Dick Van Dyke was still alive. Okay, so it's like, yay! There's something to be said for the technology must exist for reanimating corpses. For the public good. Do you know what I mean? Like when some dictator in some communist country that they just prop up on a stick to make people think he's still alive.
Yeah.
Just do that with Dick Van Dyke. Even if he's dead. Just to keep everybody's spirits up.
I really hope Dick Van Dyke doesn't die in the 3 weeks between us recording this. I mean, he'll definitely be dead while someone's
nice
listening
thing
to this.
Say.
Is it a nice thing? Yeah. You hope that someone props up the dead Dick Van Dyke.
It's very pro Van Dyke. Nice. It's a celebration of his vivacity, his joie de vivre, and his tap dancing chops.
It'd be good, it'd be good to still be
and
working
his Cockney
in film.
Accent.
His Cockney accent. Oh, poor old Dick Van Dyke. He's very good. He's very good in Mary Poppins.
He's amazing.
I love it. And Diagnosis Murder.
I remember being like from when I was 7 in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang or 6 or whatever is still tap dancing. What a lovely note to end on.
Well, the woman...
Ladies and gentlemen, Dick Van Dyke. Fuck.
I'd love to get him on if you can... If you can get any of your Hollywood contacts and you can get Dick Van Dyke on this show, I would. I did try to tweet him. I tried to get Leonard Nimoy to be my granddad, and then he died. And then I think I tweeted Dick Van Dyke. I would tweet Dick Van Dyke to tell him there's a bit in Mary Poppins where It's a Lovely Holiday with Mary, and then Mary goes, "It's a lovely holiday with you, Bert. A gentleman like you are rare. A lady needn't fear when you are near. Your sweet gentility is crystal clear."
I'm not joining in with this one.
But his face is brilliant because it's like going, "Yeah, no, I might fuck you."
Really?
Yeah. It's like hurt that she's going, "I know we're all fine. We know we're fine around you. You're in the friend zone." He's like being friend zoned by Mary Poppins.
Wow, I have to watch that again.
He's kind of going, "I might attack you." That's what he says. It's very funny. It's not that unpleasant. It's very funny. So I think I tweeted him to say how funny I thought that was, but he didn't respond. The prick. The old prick. He's got better things to do.
Imagine.
Apparently than that. Look, Joe, always lovely to see you. I will let you get back. I hope there's going to be more of your Lockwood and Company. Because it's absolutely fantastic. That's what I was going to say. When the guys from Ghosts came on, I said that I was prepared to die and become a ghost to be in the sitcom Ghosts.
Wow, to save us money on VFX.
So if I die and become a ghost, can I be in the second series?
Yes, you can. Yes, you can.
And pay out, and I'll be a scary ghost.
Brilliant. Great. Excellent.
Thank you. That is a cast iron contract. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Please welcome the amazing Joe Cornish.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Joe Cornish. The music is by Scant Regard. I am indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. Also to Chris Evans. Not that one. Get real. Thank you to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre. Thank you to Kathleen McKeegan for her fantastic research work. Thank you to my mum and dad and brother and sister and my wife and children and my mother-in-law and father-in-law. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Thanks very much for listening to the podcast. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for fantastic downloads and books and to join the Go Faster Stripe Club and get loads of stuff from really interesting comedians. Help little Chris Evans knock that one out. That would be lovely. All right, RichardHerring.com for all my gigs. Hope to see you at a gig. Come and say hi after if you've enjoyed these podcasts. Don't come if you haven't enjoyed them and say you haven't enjoyed them. It'll make me feel sad.